Please be seated. I was reflecting a little earlier on that bit that said the disciples didn't understand what Jesus was talking about. I've got about 6 feet of bookshelves commentary on St. John's Gospel, and no one understands John chapter 10, as best I can tell. It's a confusing story, lots of good images and so on, but it's if you didn't get it, you're not alone. It's been true since the first disciples. The fourth Sunday of Easter points us toward Jesus as the Good Shepherd. In itself, that's almost a joke by the time of Jesus. You probably heard it said that shepherds were rather like the bikers of the Bible, a disreputable lot. The Good Shepherd, on the other hand, does everything promised in the 23rd Psalm. The shepherd is a reviver, a protector, a provider, an anointer, a companion, and a guide. We all need different kinds of guides at different times and when we face different challenges in our lives. In a sense, it is guidance that is the primary role of the shepherd. In Jesus' day, the shepherds, as he said, would lead the sheep, would go out in front of them, and the sheep would follow, quite different from our image of shepherds going behind the flock with sheepdogs nipping at their heels, guiding from behind. With the right guide, we, every one of us, can perhaps recall our Easter joy and ourselves be ministers of good world and good news in a world and society that is as ugly and mean and contentious and divided and broken as we have seen even in recent years. Where else do we find such shepherds if not among ourselves? If not among people who have practiced the faith year in and year out, remembering what is of true and ultimate worth in worship and giving and serving, why is it that we could not be shepherds for one another? Can we learn to be clear about who we are in this day, what we value, what matters, and at the same time have some measure of sympathy for those with whom we vehemently disagree? Where do any of us find guides or mentors or psychotherapists or spiritual directors or what have you that we need at any given point in our lives? I was at a conference retreat a couple of years ago for Episcopal clergy over 55. I just snuck in on that one. And I was about the only person there who wasn't desperate to retire, who had no plans to retire. It was a fairly grim occasion, actually. But I met one fellow who was a fellow traveler, an evangelical rector from San Antonio, Texas. And he kept saying things like, "People today are indifferent to the gospel." And he said this over and over and over. And the third or fourth time, I said, "Patrick," I said, I'm so sorry. People today are not indifferent to purpose and to meaning and to good news. People are indifferent to the package that we keep putting it in. They reject inauthenticity. They reject gobbledygook. They reject the implication that salvation is to be had through program. They reject fragile institutions, human institutions that will let them down. But they do not reject good news. A Methodist researcher called Linda Mercadante wrote a book called Belief Without Borders, which was one of these anecdotal research projects about inside the mind of the spiritual but not religious. And she identified all kinds of people who identify themselves that way, including, interestingly, some churchgoers. And what they tended to reject about God or belief or creeds or doctrine or church, most of us, would reject those same things as well. What they all held in common, however, was an attachment to their own prejudices. They were not interested at all in being educated out of them, in being told it doesn't have to be that way, in being told, actually, you misunderstand that which you are judging. Frequently, they were open to community, but only on their own terms, not interested in being educated out of their prejudices. They might dabble in one tradition or another for a while, sometimes seeking or following a guide of sorts, but rarely, if ever, hearing that authentic voice of the Good Shepherd, that voice that we hear when we follow faithfully. In John 10, Jesus says, "The sheep will follow the shepherd because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger. They will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers." So how can any of us really hear, help one another hear the authentic voice of the Good Shepherd? Where are the spiritual but not religious, or indeed any of us, going to find guides, sometimes companions, sometimes guardians, encouragers, teachers, and so on? I think it's going to be with each other, among people who have practiced the faith for a long time. I think we help each other hear and know the authentic voice of the shepherd. We need different things at different points of our journeys through life, when we face different challenges. And I've always found that we're given the people we need when we need them most. I recently had the opportunity to revisit Dante's Divine Comedy. And if you've read it, you'll remember that Dante had three guides. He was guided through hell and purgatory by a pagan Roman poet called Virgil. And then Virgil, at the end, when he was starting to move towards paradise, encouraged him to cross through the burning flames of Mount Purgatory, where his muse and beloved Beatrice takes up the guiding role. And she represents divine love and reflects divine love in a way that the pagan poet could not. And she shows Dante the path of salvation. And just when they're almost there, he turns to talk to her and she's gone. She's been taken up into this final great unity within the divine. And he is met instead by his third guide, Bernard of Clairvaux. And Bernard will take him on the final stage of his journey. And why Bernard? Well, Bernard was a Cistercian contemplative who believed that both knowledge and love were necessary components of any union with God. He guides Dante to the final resolution of opposites that does not obliterate difference at all, but which has been hinted at through the whole poem, a kind of unity in spite of difference. One of my favorite hints as to what is to come appears early in the book, and it's telling for those of us seeking Easter joy and seeking to be signs of good news in a terribly broken world. The Dominican and Franciscan orders were similar in many ways. They're both mendicant. But at the time the Commedia was written, they were in major and often deadly conflict. If any of you read Umberto Eco's The Name of the Rose or saw that movie, the conflict that's underlying that is really this conflict between these orders of the day. But in Dante's poem, he has Thomas Aquinas introduce the life of St. Francis. Thomas was a Dominican, introducing the patron of the enemy. And then he criticizes his own Dominican order for their moral failings. And then St. Bonaventure, a Franciscan, introduces the life of Dominic to Dante, and he criticizes his Franciscan order for greed and corruption. It takes an extraordinary kind of sympathy to be able to know who you are, who I am, and at the same time really understand enough that you can introduce those with whom you really differ. The possibility of a kind of transcendent unity that only wise guides who are determined not to live over and against the other are not going to be defined by being someone's enemy, by being better than that other person that I don't like, by being righteous in my own being. One of my own guides, to whom I've been returning a lot this past year, because he was so helpful to me 20 years ago when he was alive, he's been coming back to me, as a chap called Edwin Friedman, a rabbi. I call him my other rabbi, Jesus being the first. He worked in a kind of emotional systems theory with a man called Murray Bowen, if that means anything to you. And what I'm remembering today is how he talked about the importance of knowing and being clear about who we are. He called it being self-differentiated. And then at the same time recognizing that sort of clarity will often bring us into conflict with those who really don't want things to change very much. And he said we must somehow stay connected with those with whom we find ourselves in conflict. Not by rehearsing the same old stuff. Not, this isn't your this isn't about let's go play out the same thing when your aunt comes for Thanksgiving, or you know, your evangelical sister tells you you're a sinner, or whatever it is. It's not rehearsing the same old thing over and over again. It's finding a way to kind of allow that to be what it is, and find ways to keep inviting connection and contact in some way, shape, or form. It's easier said than done. The authentic voice of God, the Good Shepherd, will not lead to a kind of ersatz unity that just papers over difference. It will lead more to an ability to stay connected with one another beyond or despite difference. It's really tricky. 70% is making A's. That's another thing Friedman said. You're not going to get it right all the time. Don't we all have people in our lives with whom there is no useful conversation to be had over the things that are conflicts for us? Maybe someone hurt us or put us down or betrayed us in some way. But who can teach us how to stay connected and still be true to ourselves? Who can point us even to the valley of the shadow of death such that we fear no evil? And I believe it's going to be one another. It's going to be someone we know and are known by in this community. Such guides are among us, among those who have practiced the faith through thick and thin over many years. Such guides are among us, those of us who have week by week have remembered what is of ultimate worth and importance in worship, among those of us who discovered over and over again that it is in serving that we are actually freed, and in giving we receive, and in dying to ourselves that we find our most authentic life. And in the wisdom of this community, we will hear and know the authentic voice of our Good Shepherd. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. And so, in what's becoming our customary time of silence for prayer, I invite you, as ever, to use the time however you will today. But consider asking for a measure of sympathy for those whom you find really difficult. And consider who might be a guide for you in the days to come, and who it is that you might be invited to guide along the way. In silence and in response to the gospel, let us pray.